Greetings, everybody. Welcome back to Galactic Roundtable. This is Beth. I'm so happy to be here with you tonight. I absolutely love it when we have technical glitches because it's a great meditation to smile and be calm and not be upset about it at all. It's really fun because you never know when that's going to happen, and I love practicing that. Anyway, sorry we started late. We're going to go a little bit long, not much, and get everything in. I just want to say that Donald Newsom with his brother Doug Newsom have the greatest radio station on the planet, BBS Radio. So welcome, everybody. I hope you'll call in for me tonight. I will get you those call-in numbers in just a moment. To begin with, I wrote a presentation for you today. And what I want to do, what I want to focus on tonight is so close to my heart. I want to talk about the difference between Sanat Kumara, who is also known as the Ancient of Days. And I want to talk about the difference between Sanat Kumara and Sananda Kumara. Sananda Kumara, we know, is the higher form of Jesus. Some people say Yeshua. That's not my tradition. I'm a Jesus girl. I was raised Christian, and if you follow any of my work, you know that I have a heavy emphasis on the Hindu tradition. And the reason for that is because the Hindu tradition has the oldest galactic information written on the planet. You know, you could argue with me that the Sumerian texts about Nibiru are some of the oldest galactic, but the Hindu is so old, they can't even date it. Anyways, the Hindus, for me, have some of the most important ascension information that we really need right now. So I'm hoping if I show you how Sanat and Sananda are connected, and their connections through history and how they've incarnated together during all the different times that we began golden ages on Earth through the different Earth creations. If you can see that connection, then you'll understand why I'm always talking about the Hindu stuff now. Like I said, I went to Episcopal Church, you know, all the way through high school, and one of my youngest memories of 2 years old was how much I loved Jesus. And, you know, I would go to Sunday school and they'd read us those little, you know, colorful booklets about, you know, they would tell us a story about Jesus. And I remember being 2 years old and thinking how cool it was that they built a building for him. And, you know, at the end of Sunday school, we get to go in the big church part and sing songs about Jesus. So I've always been a Christian and I love the Hindu tradition, and I want to share it more with you. So let me read what I wrote today and do this little presentation. Quick, let me get these numbers up for you in case you want to call in a little while. I apologize. I should have this right on my desktop. Okay, so the numbers are posted on my Facebook if you're there. Call in live. 888-429-5471. It's radio station 2 on bbs.com. You can listen on your computer or you can listen on your phone. There's a call-in number. The call-in number to listen live is 716-748-0144. And to call in to ask questions is 888-429-5471. 5471. So just let me take a sip here. Okay. The astrology of what's happening now is that Mercury has been retrograde almost a month and is turning back to direct on February 28th in 2 days. Along with the fact that there has been no new moon in February. You know, we cannot expect new beginnings to happen under these influences. During a Mercury retrograde, I'm going to try to talk better. It is important to go back and finish any unfinished projects which are important to you. Reach out to folks and solve old grievances. Clear away your filing or odd jobs or home repairs, which have been waiting for your attention. You don't want to carry that into, you know, your next few moments after the retrograde, because what's going to slam down on you next is all these new energies, and you won't be able to get any of that stuff done that we never want to do. So the Mercury retrograde is so beneficial because it gives you a chance to clean up your old business. So whatever you have on your to-do list, forget it. Change your to-do list for the next 48 hours to finishing everything that's old. And then you'll be in a good vibration to go into the new energies. And then bump up your to-do list 2 days later and it'll all get done. So you're going to finish all these odd jobs that have been waiting your attention. And how it feels now and for the next 48 hours is like, it's like crowning to be born anew, and you're finding out that you have like an umbilical cord wrapped several times around your neck, and the only thing to do is to cradle that part of you that's about to be born and gently remove the cord. You know, have patience for the next 2 days. Remove the cord so the birth can take place. So I urge you to get those things done now. In March, you're going to see two new moons, and the effulgent light will light the way for all your new projects. So use the last 2 days of retrograde to focus on clearing the old. The two new moons of March are March 1st and March 30th. The dark moon is when we plant our seeds of those new things we'd like to burst to the surface for our new growth. So think of it like when you plant a seed, you know, under the soil, it's completely dark under there. And that's when it's doing its thing of breaking off its shell and sprouting the new green and, you know, bursting through the surface of the soil. And that's what's happening in a new moon. It's a dark moon, you know. And this accelerated period in March with two new moons is for new growth. And it is on the full moon where we celebrate those things which grew to fullness since the month before. And we build on these each month. And we're now building for the energies of destroying the old timelines and bringing Earth to zero point energy. And with this, we'll have world peace, announcements, arrests, and the enactment of Nisara law, and spaceship landings. And the great women and men of history will return from Atlantean, Lemurian, Greek, Roman, Hindu, Egyptian, Persian, and other times and space on Earth to mentor Earth back to wholeness as they promised to do. It's almost impossible not to ask when. Everybody wants to know when. We all want to know when. Ashtar tells us no dates, no nukes, no flukes. Of course, there are many good reasons for that. The timing is solely in Mother Sekhmet's hands. She's the most powerful force in the universe, and it is her decision alone. James Gilliland wrote a piece recently, and he said, late spring, early summer. When I meditate on the signs I've seen, then I feel that that's my estimate as well. And we have been told there are two windows of opportunity each year around the times of Christmas and Easter. Considering Sananda Kumara is in charge of the universe with Ashtar, that doesn't seem too unusual to me. And, you know, I was the first one who put that out there. And since then, the spin doctors who are working for the dark have been capitalizing on that to make more confusion and making up all kinds of stories. And this is another reason why Ashtar says no dates. What will be happening this spring? You know, I started to contemplate about, you know, this Christmas and Easter connection and how great the energies were at Christmas. And so when it didn't come to pass, then it felt okay because you would just feel like everything's unfolding in its divine order as it should. So when we look at Easter, window of opportunity, we have to look around and say, well, what's happening around then? So what will be happening this spring is something, now remember, this presentation is showing you the difference between Sanat and Sananda and how they work together. What will be happening this spring is something called Vasant Navratri. It's also known as Vasant Navratras, and it begins on March 31st, 2014. And this festival of nine nights in Hinduism is celebrated by millions of people around the world, and it's dedicated to Mother Shakti, Goddess Durga, as the Hindus say, Lakshmi, who is Mother Sekhmet, and Saraswati. So these are the goddess, this is the goddess energies, and Mother Sekhmet is the one who makes the decision about the event and the timing of the event. So there's a nine-day festival celebrated by millions of people around the world to Mother Sekhmet, Lakshmi, Kali Durga, Saraswati, and it's happening starting on March 31st for nine nights. It's also referred to as Ram Navratri. Rama is a human incarnation of Father God, who is Mother Sekhmet's twin flame. God Vishnu, and Krishna was a human incarnation of Vishnu. And the dates are from March 31st to April 8th. And this festival is marked by fasting from tamasic foods. And that is, you know, like meat and oily foods, fried foods, and strong spices. Some people avoid garlic and onions. It's a form of a purification, this festival. It's getting ready. So, and the emphasis is on Divine Mother, Mother Sekhmet, the many manifestations of her, and of purification. And this is followed a week later by an April 15th full moon, when we celebrate the siege which sprouted from the March new moons. The last one will be on March 30th, when the festival began. So we have a new moon, the night beginning the nine nights. Be prepared to set intentions for yourself and your work and your family at the end of March. Easter this year will be celebrated April 20th. Many Christians do not grasp that the celebration of Jesus' resurrection is a celebration that means ascension. Resurrection means ascension. They never say that in church. The church tells us that ascension should happen after the body dies, and that's a false teaching. The goal has always been to ascend within the body without death. Krishna taught us in the Bhagavad Gita, which holds the full instructions for ascension within the living body. So Jesus, resurrection equals ascension, and Krishna wrote an ascension manual called the Bhagavad Gita. I'd like to share that with you. How did Jesus and Krishna, think of that name spelled a different way. Krishna. He's the Christ. One is the Christ whose lifetime emphasized the heart. That was Jesus. And one, you know, really this is more through his lifetime as Buddha. Buddha and Krishna are the same form. He is the mind. He mastered the mind. And Krishna demonstrates mastering the mind in the Bhagavad Gita. He explains how to do it. And that's how you get to ascension, by dissolving your little ego mind that keeps you away from ascension. So Krishna and Jesus. The highest form of Jesus is Sananda Kumara, and the highest form of Krishna is Sanat Kumara. So who were Sananda Kumara's seven earth incarnations? Let's review. Sananda Kumara in India, Melchizedek the Hebrew prophet, Shem, son of Noah, and Metatron as Enoch was a descendant of Shem, of Noah. Zoroaster, the Persian prophet, you know, Zoroaster had his own religion in Persia, and this was with Ahura Mazda. Well, Ahura Mazda was Sanat Kumara. King Tut, during that lifetime, Mother Sekhmet was walking on earth. Jesus of Nazareth, and also he's incarnate now as the King of Swords, and the King of Swords is a code name that we use because he's working deep undercover in the Secret Service, and he doesn't have his name or his face out there. He's working with his twin flame, Lady Master Nada, and the two of them together are in charge of bringing the enactment of Nasara Law and everything that goes with it behind the scenes. So Sanat Kumara is also known as the Ancient of Days and is mentioned in the Old Testament, in the book of Daniel. When Daniel was in the lion's den, they mentioned Sanat Kumara in that story. And he's in the Quran. Sanat Kumara's presence has been recognized in the Native American tradition as Wankintanka, the Great Spirit, in the Song of Hiawatha. Longfellow also refers to Gitchimanito, Manitou, the mighty, the creator of the nations, a paternal figure who looks upon his children with pity and compassion, urging them to stop their feuding. That's Sanat Kumara. The Hopi tradition describes the gathering of 144,000 rainbow warriors. Well, these are the Kumaras from the Rainbow Bridge, or the Sun Dancers. Right? Krishna, Sanat Kumara, who we're speaking of, is Vishnu, who is Father God, who is, you know, the sun, right? The sun dancers, who will unite the earth. At that time, people will have their choice to accept or reject the Creator's plan for peace on earth. The ones who reject the Creator's plan have their own free will. They will go on to a place where duality will continue, but it won't be earth. So they can stay or they can go. It's each person's choice. This is prophetically seen as the return of Quetzalcoatl, who in the ancient Mayan tradition is also the god of the planet Venus. No mistakes, everybody. I'm just drawing these connections so you can see not only how important these two are working together, but also so you can make all the connections, connect the dots. In ancient Persia, Sanat Kumara was revered as Ahura Mazda, who appeared to Zarathustra, which is another name for Zoroaster. Remember, Zoroaster was Sanat Kumara, in the presence of six other beings of light, who were also Kumaras. It is said that in their presence, Zarathustra did not see his own shadow upon the earth, owing to their great light. Ahura Mazda means wise lord. Zarathustra recognized Ahura Mazda as the one true God, the creator of the universe, and went on to create a spiritual tradition based on keeping the flame. You know, that's the violet flame. Even today, devotees of Zoroastrianism use fire upon their altar in remembrance. In Sanskrit, the language of the Vedas, from the Hindu tradition, Sanat Kumara means eternal beautiful youth. The seed symbol Ra also means the flame or sacred fire. Sanat Kumara is Father God, who Jesus called my Father in heaven. And he was in heaven, you know, because he was flying a mothership called Nibiru with his wife, Mother Sekhmet. So Sanat Kumara is Ra and Alcyone with his twin flame consort, Mother Sekhmet. Sanat has 24 earth incarnations and is incarnate now, and Mother Sekhmet is incarnate now, and Sananda is incarnate now working as King of Swords to end the time on earth. From the Ramayana, which is a great Hindu epic, they mention Sanat. Let me read a passage from that. This passage is at the beginning of the Ramayana, and it is one of the greatest works written available on earth because it explains the hierarchy of the spiritual hierarchy of heaven, who are our galactic family. It tells you exactly who they are. When Westerners read it, they kind of go nuts because we don't know the Hindu names or who they are. But if someone filled in the names for you and you read the Ramayana with the names that you're familiar with, you know, of the different avatar forms of these different high beings like Saint Germain and Archangel Michael, and everyone that you know from the hierarchy is mentioned in the Ramayana, but they use their Hindu names. And so when you read it, you're like, what? And so I'm encouraging you to put aside the things you don't know and keep reading these things because it will click in and it's a lot of fun. Let me read this passage from the Ramayana. Here, sire, a tale of days gone by, to many a sage in time of old, Sunat Kumar, the saint foretold, how from thine ancient line, O king, a son, when years came round, should spring. To him no mortal shall be known, except his holy sire alone. Still by those laws shall he abide, which lives of youthful Brahmins guide. Obedient to the strictest rule that forms the young aesthetic school, and all the wondering world shall hear of his stern life and penance drear, his care to nurse the holy fire and do the bidding of his sire. He, at the offering of the steed, the flames with holy oil shall feed. I have repeated, sire, thus far, the words of old Sunat Kumar, in order as he spoke them then amid the crowd of holy men. Let me tell you something. I made the Ramayana, you know, available on Amazon. I think you can get it for $5 or $6. You know, go on Amazon and put in Elizabeth Troutman and see what you see. The Ramayana is 3,000 pages long, and it is a rhyming poem. Every other line rhymes for 3,000 pages. I'm getting ready to make this available in another way that will be easier to read. But when I finished reading the Ramayana, I sobbed for an hour because it was the most beautiful love story I had ever read. It was so profoundly deep. It's so much fun to read. It talks about the Hindu society, which back then, it takes place 10,000 years ago, was a Jetson society. And when you translate it into English, they use the phrases flying cars and flying cities, depending on who's doing the flying around, if it's a shuttlecraft or a mothership. And you know that this is the history of Earth. And it's this great love story. You know, and there's war and there's all kinds of cool stuff that everybody loves. And the whole thing rhymes. It rhymes. Can you believe that? Okay. So Sanat Kumara in the Buddhist tradition is known as Dimpankara, the lamp-lighting Buddha, said to predate the historical Buddha in a world cycle long past. Now, what we know is that Father God, Sanat Kumara, Krishna, and Buddha are all the same one, with Alcyone and Ra. Sanat Kumara is referenced in the Quran, in Rumi's poetry, and in other Islamic work as El-Qadir. Speaking of El-Qadir, the Prophet Muhammad says, I have seen my Lord in the most beautiful of forms. El-Qadir preserves and maintains the reality of the golden chain by training prophets and mystics to come to understand that above every knower, there is a greater knower. He is the benign presence of divine wisdom as imparted by the divine himself through direct revelation. So how is that different from a guru in India? It's not different at all. He makes sudden appearances to succor people in times of need and is a hidden initiator to those who walk the mystical path. As spiritual head of the divinely instituted hierarchy of saints, He rules over the men of the unseen, exalted saints and angels who transfer divine science, theosophia down through the ages. So, you know, when you're doing your inner work and you're calling on your guides, Archangel Michael, Archangel Metatron, Saint Germain, Sananda, Ashtar, Mother Mary, Raphael, whoever you're working with, you may want to add Sanat Kumara to your list. Call on him and see what you see and hear what you hear, that might be a very fun and exciting adventure for you. Now, as we estimate a date for the event coming this spring or early summer, maybe, you know, no dates, we will see the relationship between Sananda and Sanat as Jesus and Krishna, the heart and the head, and the relationship between Easter happening on April 20th and 11 days later. You know, 11 means one and one, the one becoming the one. There's a day called, one day, celebration holiday called Akshaya Tritiya. It's a very popular festival that the Hindus and Jains celebrate every year. It will be celebrated in 2014 on Friday, May 2nd. It's considered as one of the most important days of the Hindu community, as it is the day of the Lord Parasurama. The Hindu community considers this day as a lucky day and believes that any venture, such as a business or the construction of a building, started on that day will follow betterment and prosperity. Akshaya Tritiya is a one-day event celebrated in late April or early May, and Hindus celebrate this day because, according to them, it's the day when the great god of wisdom, God Ganesha, started writing the epic work called the Mahabharata. It is believed that when the Pandavas were in their exile and the Lord presented them a bull, which was named Akshaya Tritiya, that bull was never empty and produced an unlimited amount of food on demand. You know, this is a kind of auspicious day where the emphasis is on abundance. So a little bit more about that. It is believed that the great poet, the Vaidvyas, along with Lord Ganesh, started writing the epic Mahabharata on that day. And this day is also considered the first day of the Satya Yuga, or the beginning of time. That means, you know, on May 2nd, what they're saying, you know, they would be typically expecting for that day is to change the timelines. And that's exactly what the event is. So Easter's on April 20th, 11 or 12 days later, we're having this Hindu celebration, which is the beginning of time. It's also marked with great pomp and celebrations all over India. People mainly worship, Goddess Lakshmi and Lord Ganesh on this day. They want to usher in a golden beginning full of fortune, wealth, and good luck. Goddess Lakshmi is also prayed along with her husband, Lord Vishnu. And people visit the temples of Lakshmi and Iran and Lord Krishna to offer endowments for eternal prosperity. I know people tell me that they don't call in because they don't want to interrupt me. And that's okay. But if you have a question, please do call in now. You know, I could talk about this stuff all night long. And I have more to say, but I'm more than happy to answer questions too. Let's see. Where did I put those phone numbers? Here we go. So if you have a question and you'd like to call in, please dial in to 888-429-5471. 888-429-5471. So what I've been working on today is the Mahabharata, I'm going to read this to you. If you call in, you know, I can interrupt what I'm doing. No problem. Because this is an ongoing live dialogue that we'll be having about ascension. So what I did was I recorded the entire Bhagavad Gita, and I put it on podcast and I put it on YouTube. So the Bhagavad Gita is around 100 pages long, 90 something pages long, and it is 18 chapters. And so today I have put 13 chapters up on YouTube because I want this to be available to everybody. And I have 13 chapters up there so far. I'm going to have to work on it until I go to bed tonight, but it'll all be up there today. So let me explain to you, if you don't know much about the Gita. The Mahabharata, the Gita is found in book 6 of the Mahabharata. Remember I was saying the Ramayana is 3,000 pages long? The Mahabharata is around 10,000 pages long, and it's our true galactic history. And I've read portions of it, but I haven't read all of it yet. In book 6, which is called Bhishma Parva, the entire Gita is contained within that book 6. And this is what I have about that. This book of the Mahabharata is important for two reasons. First of all, it contains the Bhagavad Gita, the best known Hindu sacred text. Secondly, this book describes the start of the enormous battle, which is the centerpiece of the work, specifically the first 10 days of conflict up to the fate of the hero Bhishma. Finally, we move on to the battle itself, which occupies 2/3 of book 6, a relentless and immersive description of the horror of war. This was the Orion Wars, everybody. And if any of you have memories about, you know, negative ETs or, you know, the Star Wars, many of you are carrying, you know, Orion energy and memories of these times. And this is where it's all written down what happened then. This is a true story, and you were there. If you weren't there, you wouldn't be living on Earth right now. Book 6, a relentless and immersive description of the horror of war. This is the Orion War. This is literally a blow-by-blow description of each incident of combat over a period of 10 days. And this is no ordinary battle. You know, they were using nuclear weapons, and that's why we have this prime directive on this planet, and that's why they won't help except in cases of nuclear war or mass psychological attack. The combatants absorb incredible numbers of arrows and are still standing, ready to fight the next day. Well, they're saying arrows, but it wasn't just arrows. It was, you know, what we call alien technology. The field is stalked by vampires and cannibals. Now, does that sound familiar to today? Al Gore's a vampire, you know. So are a lot of other people out there. There are rivers and oceans of blood and gore. The heroes wield super weapons and magic spells, only described elliptically, with which they slay thousands of opponents at a time. And at the end, we learn how Bhishma, the undefeatable leader of the Duryodhana's army, is finally brought down. These are the cabal, everybody, the dark cabal who we're trying to bring down now, who we almost have brought down. The Bhagavad Gita by Krishna, which is chapters 1 through 18, as found in book 6 of the Mahabharata, is read by Elizabeth Trutwin, and it's out on YouTube for your study, reference, and enjoyment. A gift from me to you, which will speed up your ascension process manifold, as long as you integrate the instructions from God as Krishna into your own practice. Make it a part of your life. If you do not comprehend all of it at once, then listen again. I made you this for those of you who have busy lives and cannot take time to read. Enjoy these on your commute, in the background, when you on your computer, or during your workout. Namaste. So this is the real deal. If you know, the stuff that happened in Jesus' life is really cool. So now if you don't know much about Krishna and you want to learn about Krishna, well, guess what? He wrote an ascension manual. It's called the Gita, and I've recorded it for you. All you have to do is listen. You don't even have to read it. It's only 100 pages if you did want to read it, and I've read it multiple times through, and I strongly recommend it. So if it ever sounds like maybe I have a lot of knowledge or something, it's just because I sit around reading these ancient texts, the galactic texts, because they have the answers in them. They were written down a long time ago because they knew this time would come and we would need to know this stuff. So what I'd like to do now is give you a little taste of it. I'm going to read you a chapter in the Gita, which I picked out today when I was doing my work. I have, you know, listened to my recording again in the last day and a half. So it was probably my fifth time reading the Gita since September. I probably read it once a month. I consider it one of the most important works out there. This is not Kumara. You know, in the hierarchy, he's above Sananda Kumara. He is his father in heaven. And this is what he says we all should do. So I'm going to read you this. If you have a question to call in, I don't mind being interrupted. This is only a few minutes long. I'm just going to take a second here. Okay. So the Bhagavad Gita is 18 chapters long. And the 18th chapter is kind of a wrap-up of the whole thing. And what I'm going to share with you is chapter 17. And this is the chapter before the end of the chapter. So this is written, this was translated in, I think, in the 1820s. And it sounds a little bit like Old English. So I'm going to kind of read it slow. And when you're focusing on the words, imagine how they apply to the cabal, to the Illuminati, to ego mind, and think of the words as being translated into today's terms and how important the information is. So in the Hindu work, it talks a lot about the three worlds, right? And in Christianity, we have God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. And in Hindu tradition, they have the Great Trinity, they call it, and they have Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva. They're both the same teachings. There's a lot about the threes, right? So they talk about this in chapter 17. This is a conversation between Rama Arjuna, who's getting ready to fight this battle. He's the leader of the good guys, the goodly company. He represents them. And he's trying to get Krishna to explain to him what the battle means. He's going into the battle with trepidation because he's a white knight and he doesn't want to kill anybody. So Krishna, through the entire Bhagavad Gita, explains the rationale for war and why these ones at the end of time have to leave the planet. And he's explaining to Arjuna that, you know, he's walking in the matrix as a human being, but he's not doing the killing. God is in charge of all of it, he says. And so this is chapter 17, and it begins with Arjuna speaking with Krishna, and this is Arjuna's words. If men forsake the holy ordinance, heedless of shastras, yet keep faith at heart and worship, what shall be the state of those, great Krishna, Satwan, Rajas, Tamas, say? And Krishna says, threefold of the faith of mankind and springs from those three qualities, becoming true or passion-stained or dark, as thou shalt hear. The faith of each believer, Indian prince, conforms itself to what he truly is. Where thou shalt see a worshiper, that one, to what he worships, lives assimilate. Such as the shrine, so is the votary. The soothfast souls adore true gods. The souls obeying rajas worship rashakas or yakshas. And the men of darkness pray to pitras and to bhutas. Don't let these, Sanskrit words throw you off guard. I'll be putting on my website the English, so if you want to Google the Sanskrit words, you'll get the meanings for them. When you start to read the Sanskrit, the Hindu texts a little bit, these words become very familiar very quickly. Yea, and those who practice bitter penance not enjoyed by rightful rule, penance which hath its root in self-sufficient, proud hypocrisies. Those men, passion-beset, violent, wild, torturing, and witless ones, my elements shut in fair company within their flesh, nay, me myself present within the flesh. Know them to devils devoted not to heaven. For like as foods are threefold for mankind, in nourishing so is their threefold way of worship, abstinence and almsgiving. Hear this of me. There is a food which brings force, substance, strength, and health, and joy to live, being well seasoned, cordial, comforting, the soothfast meat. And there be foods which bring aches and unrests and burning blood, grief, being too biting, heating, salt, and sharp, and therefore craved by too strong an appetite, and there is foul food, kept from overnight, savorless, filthy, which the fowl will eat, a feast of rottenness, meat for the lips, of such a love the darkness. Thus, with rites, a sacrifice not for rewardment made, offered in rightful wise, when he who vows saith with heart devout, this I should do, is soothfast right, but sacrifice for gain, offered for good repute. Be sure that this, O best of Bharatas, is Rasha's right, with stamp of passion and a sacrifice, offered against the laws with no due dole, of food giving with no accompaniment, of hallowed him or largest to the priests. In faithless celebration, call it vile. The deed of darkness, lost, worshipped of gods, of twice-born teachers, elders, purity, rectitude, and the brahmacharya's vows, and not to injure any helpless thing, these make a true religious act. Words causing no man woe, words ever true, gentle and pleasing words, and those ye say in murmured reading of a sacred writ, these make the true religiousness of speech. Serenity of soul, benignity, sway of the silent spirit, constant stress, to sanctify the nature, these things make good right and true religiousness of mind. Such threefold faith in highest piety, kept with no hope of gain, by heart devout, is perfect work of Satwan, true belief. Religion shown in act of proud display, to win good entertainment, worship, fame, such, say I, is of rajas, rash and vain. Religion followed by witless will to torture self or commit power to hurt another. Tis of tamas, dark and ill, the gift lovingly given when one shall say, now must I gladly give, when he who takes can render nothing back, made in due place, due time, to a meet recipient, is gift of Satvan, fair and profitable, the gift selflessly given, where to receive is hoped again, or when some end is sought, or where the gift is proffered with a grudge. This is of rajas, stained with impulse, ill, the gift churlishly flung at evil time, in wrongful place, to base recipient, made in disdain or harsh unkindliness, is a tamas, dark, it doth not bless. That is chapter 17 of the Bhagavad Gita. So I hope you'll go on YouTube, put in Elizabeth Trutwin, and put in, you know, just put in Gita, G-I-T-A, and you'll find these there. And this is the Ascension Manual written by Lord Krishna. So everybody, wow, this hour goes fast. We're at the end. And so I want to sing you out with this song. I hope you have a wonderful week. I have a new Ashtar message to share later tonight. And if you want to get an email from me, send it to beth.trutwin@yahoo.com. I'll put you on my email list for my new messages and new information. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful week.